Welcome to Alex of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I am your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the Detroit Lions here. A fan favorite, or a favorite, if you will, of the a recent guest, Eric Eager over at PFF, Restore the Roar. So we'll talk a little bit here about the Lions, some of the things that we're looking for. I was doing the deep dive on this, and I found some interesting stuff in terms of some of their pass rate stuff. 31st in terms of early down pass rate. I'm going to use this phrase a little bit more because it's interesting to me, and I'm doing some work on Baltimore, and I shared this in the chat, but I will, and I'll explain this more in some other points. What it specifically is. So this shouldn't be the only time, but I do want to mention it because I do think it is important. Early down pass rate is the phrase I'll use for this. It's basically a pass rate on early downs when the game's close, right? And that's kind of like your neutralish game script, what your pass rate is. And because that's the most, that gives you the best indication. Are you a pass happy team? Are you a run heavy team? Sort of what you are. They're in 31st. So the only team that ran it more frequently on first down was Tennessee and those neutral game scripts, right? So those early down situations. So that's one thing I have a little bit of pause on, but we'll talk about this. It's actually a pretty fertile situation. And so that would be my overall takeaway from this is I could really see some positive coming from this situation. So 17th in terms of plays per game at 61.2. 71.2 would be a record. 18th in terms of dropbacks per game. Again, 31st in terms of your early down pass rate. 20th in terms of overall design pass rate. Again, you're playing from behind, so that sort of elevates that. 58.4%. And then 13th in terms of pacing, which is 27.4 plays per game. So that's just a little bit better than the average there. 12th in terms of percentage of throws behind the line of scrimmage. First in terms of short throws, is there 0 through 9 yards. 30th in terms of medium, 30th in terms of deep. So anything really 10 yards and beyond the line of scrimmage, pretty infrequent for an NFL team. So I think that is, there's probably a couple of factors to that. Number one, I think you could say, hey, listen, like there weren't a ton of weapons to throw to vertically. And if you sort of pivot, and we'll pivot in a second, but if you think about, hey, why was Amon-Ra St. Brown pretty good last year? Well, there wasn't a ton, and he was able to sort of dominate in the short area, right? He sort of dragged some of those targets shorter. That could be a factor, right? A factor could be, hey, that's just not really a Goff staple. The Jameson Williams situation makes that really interesting, and how that fits in and how he fits into a Jared Goff-led offense, I think is really interesting. 22.4% of the pass attempts were on play action. That's 26th in the league. Pretty healthy improvement, almost 33% over non-play action in terms of yards per attempt. That's the 10th best. So they did have some positive, some positive there in terms of improvement over non-play action. I could say, hey, listen, if this is a team that you think is going to be better this year, if you think it's a team that actually could improve, I think maybe that number goes up. And they're not playing maybe so much from behind. And honestly, if they converted some of that early down rush stuff into some play action stuff, I think there's a lot of meat on that bone offensively. So that'd be one place I'd think about it. DeAndre, I came away from this exercise looking at this really encouraged by DeAndre Swift. And it's funny because I'm recording this shortly after putting together that thread on Javonte Williams. I just, like, you look at Swift and he's got the ability to really shift things. So 79th percentile in targets per route run. That is 23.8% of his routes he was actually targeted on. That's a pretty healthy number. 0.38 expected points per route run at 79th percentile. So again, there's some good stuff there. Pretty lucrative situation for him. Second in terms of targets per game, 5.9. Fifth in terms of routes per game, 24.6. So really, some really interesting stuff there overall at the position there for Swift. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 81.6% route participation. That's almost 90th percentile. He's targeted on 22% of his routes, and that's good for 82nd percentile. As a day three rookie, that is a smashing success. It really is. And I know people want to poo-poo and all that stuff. And it's really tough. It's really tough to sort of pick between. Like, there's 15, 20 guys where you could say, you know, you could throw him and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah, you could throw Amon-Ra St. Brown and Mooney and Sutton and Gabe Davis and, you know, Juju. And you could just go and just sort of put them all together. And you could make an interesting argument about all of them. I mean, and it honestly, to me, has come down to, I don't know. Like, I just, all right, like, let's search for things that are rare. And if we're trying to have, and I do think that there's credible arguments that you could make for each player. Again, I always get, you know, when what I will reject, as I will say this, I reject this, is a dismissive statement about a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown. Oh, just last year it was all situation. I don't think that's true, because if you throw a shitty wide receiver out there, they're not going to get targeted 22% of the time. So I reject that premise as being untrue. People have used Travis Fulgham as a comp. I think it's a bad comp. When you look at him, he actually performed under expectation. Again, you know, when you look at how he did, Amon-Ra St. Brown performed over expectation. Travis Fulgham, when he had his breakout, you know, his mini breakout there in 2020, 64 targets on 360 routes. That's good for a 17.8 target rate there on his routes run. You know, that's well below the 22% for Amon-Ra St. Brown. Again, vastly different in terms of expectation on a route run basis as well, like 20% lower in terms of that. He had 0.34 points per route run compared to 0.40. So a big difference there. So I reject that notion. And again, you could say we could have a lot of these arguments. I think for the purpose of this, like, suffice it to say that it's really tough to pick between guys in that range, but I don't think you should just dismiss him, right? So if you're thinking about a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, the way I would think about him is maybe not necessarily he's a target guy at his cost, and we'll get into the cost a little bit more in a second here, but you could think about him as being included in a tier that it's like, all right, like there's a bunch of guys here, and if one of them slips to me, I'm fine taking him. And I think that Amon-Ra St. Brown is probably one of those guys. You know, if you're kind of looking at the point, you're like, there's like 10 of these guys. If I get three of them, I'm feeling all right. It's like, you know, as what is that, wide receiver 3, 4, 5, something like that. If you're being super aggressive, it's 2, 3, and 4. Well, that's probably a weak core. But, you know, I've gotten myself into those situations, and I'm in it right now as I'm recording this draft. I'm in it where I've got, you know, Keenan Allen is a 1. And then there's like 15 guys. Like after that, I'm like, listen, if I can nab 2 of them or 3 of them, I'll walk out of this feeling fine. And if I could nab 4 of them, that's great. But you get the idea, right? Like I'm pretty comfortable in the tier. And there's a lot of arguments for a lot of different guys that frankly have a varying degree of compellingness, and he's one that has one. So that would be the other thing I would say. And honestly, if you flip it forward and just think about this for a second, what are you looking for in terms of guys that trying to determine whether or not they're above expectation, or sorry, whether or not that they're actually good, right? Whether or not they're actually a good player or the situation is really good. Well, I think an easy way to look at that is to say, all right, well, what was their situation expectation and did they overperform it? It's simple, right? Like what, you know, and I think about this in like, you know, I just use, let's just switch this for a second. Okay. If I have a case, right. And I make jokes like this all the time. If I have a case where my boss's office is, where my boss's house is broken into. He's an eyewitness. There's DNA, there's videotape, there's fingerprints, and there's a confession, right? I have to win that case, right? Like I have to win that case, right? And if I lose it, there's pretty good evidence with all of those pieces of evidence, which never happen. Those combination of facts almost never go to trial. Never happens. And if that's the case and I lose, I'm probably not good. Right, I'm probably not good at trying a case, right, as a prosecutor. If I have a bad case and I lose it, right, there's no witnesses, or maybe there's a witness, but he's uncooperative, or they didn't see a ton, or she, they go south on you on the witness stand. There's no DNA, right? There's no think of like a domestic violence case where the person becomes uncooperative and you're up there and they're like, nah, I don't know what you're talking about and all this stuff. And it's like, you lose that case. Like that doesn't really tell you much about your skill. Right. And I think about the cases where they're really hard. And a lot of these are like, gang homicides, for example, are really hard. Bar fights are really hard. Those types of cases in particular aren't won very commonly. Like if two gang members shoot at each other, like no one really cares all that much as right. Like that's the, to get a jury to really try and convict, like it's a tough row to hoe, if you will. Like it's a tough situation to get people to really care about. Two people get in a bar fight. Like those are some of the worst cases, there's some other ones as well, but you think about those tough cases. Road rage incidents are terrible. Spousal rape cases are like terrible. Like, college sexual assault cases are terrible. Like you think about those cases and you look at a person that constantly wins those cases, right? Like those are, if someone is constantly winning, murder cases where, drug dealers are getting killed, or where gang members are getting killed, and when there's little evidence, right? There's some videotape, something like that, or maybe there's a witness that gives you sort of some help, but not a ton. You're not really getting that DNA. It's a lot of circumstantial stuff, right? That's a common occurrence in these. Is a lot of circumstantial stuff, but you keep winning, right? Like you're winning those at 75-80%, which is a huge number on those types of cases. That's a really good outcome. You try 10-12 of them and you win, 7-8 of them, right? 9 of them, something like that. You're probably pretty good. And so you sort of look at circumstances like that, and you can think about that in your own life. Like, when are you expected not to succeed? Right? Like, when are you expected to succeed, and when do you fail in that? Or if you have kids, right? Like what things can you give your kids that's isn't age appropriate for them, right? It's too good, right? It's too hard for them, right? It's asking too much, and they fail at it, right? Because like you're not gonna teach my 4-year-old calculus. But if all of a sudden my 4-year-old is really outperforming and and shapes and numbers and counts to 250 or whatever, you're like, okay, all right, we're actually like doing really like that. Those are good things. That's a lot of how I have started to view these situations, and I think the PFF data is super helpful in that. So let's just compare this for a second, okay? TJ Hockenson last year, 1.48 yards per route run. That's an good number at the tight end position. Not great, not bad. It's good. His expectation, 1.59. So he actually underperformed expectation last year in terms of what his expected yards per route run were. Amon-Ra St. Brown instead. Like if you think about Amon-Ra St. Brown instead, in the same prism, 1.74 yards per route run. He was expected for 1.66. So he overperforms that expectation. So you could say to yourself, hey, listen, it was a bad situation and he just made it really good or all that stuff. But he took the situation that he had and made it better than it was expected for. Okay? That means something to me, right? That should mean something to us, right? And we far too often just dump on players that perform well in bad situations or whatever. Let's use our mind. Like that's probably an indication that Amon-Ra St. Brown's pretty good. And so that would just be the thing I would think about, right? Again, am I making him necessarily a target player? No. But I do think in that range of guys, right, in the wide receiver 20 to 40 range, we might like a dozen, 15 guys, something like that. He's a guy that you put in there and say, all right, like I'm going to take a shot on three or four of them, and he's in that tier, right? And sort of how they figure out and how they flesh out, you know, and maybe if I'm drafting, I don't know, 5 or 10 drafts this year, right? And I'm sort of taking, you know, three or four shots in there, right? I'm taking him, you know, market appropriate, right? Something expectation wise, maybe a little bit over that, something like that, because I'm sort of I'm more invested in that. Maybe I'm even 2x, just because a lot of my guys are sort of focused on in that range. I'm fine with doing something like that, right? Again, look at where it's cheap. Like I got Gabe Davis at wide receiver. Like it was like 40 plus this year, right? It's way past his ADP. And these are all the sorts of situations I think about with a guy like Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? Hey, he's past his ADP. I'll take him here, right? I'm just going to try and create some value and it allowed me to do some other stuff. And like, that's kind of how I would view these guys. And so it's a little bit maybe bigger lesson in terms of some of the stuff that I think about with terms of guys. Amon-Ra St. Brown's one of those guys, like a Rorschach test, like those paint blobs that you look at and you say, oh, that's a beer, or that's like Superman, or that's my brother or whatever, right? Like you're looking at these things and you're trying to figure out what they are. He's kind of that, right? Like you get a lot of people, different people can observe or interpret them different ways. So, but I do think positively about him, and I just wanted to share some of my thoughts on how I think about those, you know, when we can get process into some players, I think it's helpful. So Hockenson, 6.8 targets per game. When you look at some of his targets per route run, he's, I would say, good to very good, right? 83rd percentile in terms of yards per route run, 88th percentile in terms of expectation of yards per route run. So that's a situation that maybe could get a little bit better. North of 20.5% of his routes he's targeted on. That's upwards of 80-plus percent there. So good stuff overall there. Now, when we look at the overall offensive situation, if we work down our summary here of the Detroit Lions, we do see that they are pretty favorable to running backs. Is I think maybe the biggest takeaway that I have from this. They were seventh in terms of running back routes per drop back, but first in terms of running back targets per drop back, first in terms of receptions per drop back, eighth in terms of yards per drop back. I think it's pretty notable. A big chunk of their stuff was actually with wide receivers as well. They were fourth in terms of wide receiver routes per drop back, but underperformed 16th in terms of targets per drop back, 15th in terms of receptions per drop back, and 19th in terms of yards per drop back. So you should get an opportunity here to maybe get some more from that position. This offense created opportunities and they just weren't very good. So you think about a situation like Jameson Williams could come in and maybe potentially lift this offense if he plays early on. I think that's a big thing to think about. But this offense has some nice stuff. They weren't particularly friendly to tight ends. You know, Hockenson was in and out, so just for what that's worth, and they didn't really have much in terms of after him. Volume in the red zone, they were 27, so pretty small volume there. Red zone rush rate was actually, they ranked 24th, so when they're getting down there, they're throwing pretty frequently. However, their running back red zone rush rate at the percentage of their runs in the red zone that were actually from the running back was actually first in the league at 93% there. Fourth in terms of expected points for running backs, 21st in expected wide receiver points, and 20th in terms of expected tight end points. They ranked 21st and 19th respectively in pass block and rush block PFF unit grades. So that's the overall takeaways there. We'll look here in terms of some of the RDP stuff. Swift is RDP of 4. He's got a underdog ADP of running back 8. I like him at the cost, I think, more than some other guys like Javonte Williams. I'll say this. If you're going to go young at the position and you're not going if you're not going Taylor or Harris early, I think I'd rather have Swift over Javonte Williams. And I would say this, I think I would rather, the allure and the ceiling of McCaffrey's enticing. But I think depending on what the bet you want to make is, Swift belongs in that conversation. I don't think though that Javonte Williams is, belongs in the same conversation as Swift. You just look at the performance, look at some of his profile stuff. It's really good. I think is really especially the situation is really good. And I think he, slightly underperformed. I could quibble a little bit with some of his metrics. I'm not going to do that, but I would say generally he's very good. Good to very good. And the situation is very good. So that would be the thing that I would say overall about him. Jamal Williams, again, I think he's a really high-end injury away guy just because of this. Again, this offense has the ability. It's a good offensive line. There's elite picks all over this. Penei Sewell and their center as well, and then their Decker as well. So they've got picks everywhere in terms of an elite set of offensive support systems around Goff, maybe outside of the pure pass catchers, right? But I will say this: if you were to plan in a top 5 pick at the quarterback position next year, right? If you're thinking, hey, Goff's not that good and Goff's not the answer, but they've got they got picks, they could make a push to go. And go get a guy next year. You'd be hard pressed to find a better spot than Detroit, right? Like you might find a better spot, but it's probably Philly and maybe outside of those teams. Like there's not a ton of situations that are a lot better for a young quarterback than this situation is. So especially if Amon-Ra St. Brown proves he's real, like that's all of a sudden, like you've got multiple weapons at receiver, you've got a tight end, you've got core pieces along the offensive line, a good pass catching running back. Like you have a lot of answers to the offensive game, which I find really interesting. Fifth in terms of RDP for Hockenson, seventh in underdog. Jameson Williams, 25th in terms of RDP, 58th in terms of underdog. I think got to watch the knee situation. DJ Shark's an interesting one. I'm not sure how he's a huge game beater or anything like that. But listen, I will say this. If something happens to Jameson Williams and Shark can come in and play, like we've seen him play, he can play pretty well. 63rd in terms of RDP, 68th in terms of underdog. So he's one that's got kind of that negative split. It's not great, but I do think he's a guy that could potentially, perform into the 40s, something like that. And maybe even with a healthy situation and Jameson Williams sort of ease back in. Shark takes off from the beginning of the season. He could play in the wide receiver 3 range. That wouldn't shock me either. So he might be one of those guys outside the top, 50. Like I say, maybe there's a couple of them every year that you want to be interested in. Shark, I could find myself being in on that. And I think it's an early reveal. Either he's not good or and you can move on from him, or he's good and he's going to help you. Right? I think that's a good situation there for taking a shot on him. And then Goff is 25th in terms of underdog, 29th in terms of RDP. I do think at his cost, he probably warrants a selection in the quarterback 3 range. I think he certainly fits the bill of a candidate for selecting there. So that'll pretty much do it for this. Again, I think when you get some of these players that are I don't know, prototypes, or if they demonstrate some of the core things we talk about, so I like to sort of dive into them. So a little bit there on Amon-Ra St. Brown, but overall, I like the offense, and I'm pretty optimistic on Swift versus some of the guys in his younger. Grouping there, younger counterparts. But I will say this, I do think you can go cheaper. You know, I've pivoted from Swift to like Kittle. I've done that sort of pivot because I think a guy like Swift is a little bit more replaceable than a guy like Kittle is. So if I can get an elite tight end at the cost of Swift, I'm fine doing it, just because I think you can go and replicate Swift in a way that it's much tougher to do at the tight end position. I think that'll always be the thing with me, that especially in tight end premium, I'll always sort of lean early tight end over early running back or early wide receiver, just because of the scarcity argument, right? Just because it's much more difficult to get. So that's really been the thing there. I know I've involved Swift in some stuff this year, and people have followed suit on some of that stuff. I do like Swift. I think this show kind of talks about why I like Swift. But I think in terms of Swift's profile, you can find some other stuff at the position that might be cheaper and have some similar upsides, maybe not necessarily the longevity, but find some definitely rarer profiles for the cost of Swift at other positions. All right, that'll do it for this episode. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We will talk again very soon.